So tonight, we're going to be continuing on our theme of Move for Mission. And this is sort of fits in with our Go and Grow project, our big building move, which is very exciting. I'm very excited, especially the thought of all the kind of exciting youth work facilities we might have. And I've been trying to get a football pitch somewhere in there. We'll see what happens. The latest idea I've had is if we can get it in like the underground car park, I was thinking. So I actually emailed you about that, Ryan. So yeah, really excited about it. And so we're just going to be continuing with that. But the first question actually I want to put out to you guys is, what is Jesus doing in your life at the moment? What is he showing you? What is he teaching you? What is he kind of showing you about yourself? What is Jesus doing in your life at the moment? I just want you to turn to the person next to you or in twos and threes. Yeah, what's going on in your life? What's Jesus doing at the moment? Okay, good. All right, I asked you that question, guys, because, it's something that maybe some of you immediately, you're kind of, I definitely know this. Jesus is showing me this in my life right now. It's amazing. Or he's really taking me on a journey with something. And then others of you, perhaps it's something that you don't often reflect over or think about. What is he working on at the moment? We're supposed to be followers of him. So when we follow him, he's showing us things as we go along. So I've been working at St. Barnabas here as a volunteer or a placement student, or now on staff at St. B's for over 4 years. And in that time, there's a common phrase that has arisen, and this was coined by my predecessor, Liz Bewley, the legendary former youth pastor here. And the phrase would come up often when we were dealing perhaps with difficult pastoral situations with the amazing young people, or just awkward things, or where they were having challenges of faith in whatever way that looked like. And the phrase that she would say to me was, "It's okay, James, they're on a journey." And it sounds a bit cheesy, but it's really quite helpful. And maybe if I'm feeling particularly frustrated, it's like, "It's okay, James, we're on a flipping journey, it's fine." It helps us to know that, these young people, no matter what they're going through, no matter what they're struggling with in certain areas of faith or just working out their salvation, but if we encourage them to pursue their relationship with Jesus, he'll help them sort of work it out. So whether that may be through me or my volunteers, my amazing volunteers, or through community, through his spirit, he'll work it out. And that's just really awesome. So I'm quite good at this now. It's okay, James, they're on a journey. I'll just say this to myself. So I'm quite good at that, but I've realized in my own life, this does not happen so much. And, I realize that, like all of us, I'm on this journey as well. And whether it's to do with my calling or my job or areas of brokenness or, of dealing with sin or peace, faith, identity, these are all things that I'm working through and I'm working at. This is important to know. And, maybe there's issues with my young people that perhaps I know that I've, myself, I've grown through that, I've conquered, I'm kind of further along on it. But there's just so much more I know that I've got to deal with for the rest of my life. And, it's a journey, it's a process. And because when it comes to our identity and realizing it and acting out of it, this is a journey for all of us to go on. And it's about realizing our identity in Christ, that he is in us. And we're in him. And the way that we live out of that is to glorify him. And the theological term for this is sanctification, which essentially means becoming more Christ-like. And it's a process. It's a journey. And, there's aspects of our conversion that are essentially like in the bag. And we know this. Finished, done, not by us, but by Jesus. And, because it's by him, we can't change that. And that's amazing. I think on this, if you look at the next slide here. There's things that are signed, sealed, delivered. And that's kind of like known as justification, which is like we know we're in right legal standing with God. We know that in the eyes of God, we're seen as holy, we're seen as perfect. He sees us as these finished articles already, you know, because he's outside of time. He sees us as these finished articles. So that's justification. And this is the same for all Christians. We're all equal in this. But when it comes to sanctification, this is a continuous process that we are a part of, that we have to cooperate with God with in relationship. Because at the end of the day, we know we're not perfect. We know that there's work to be done. We know we're not the finished articles. So it's a process. Or another term, as I've said it before, could be like working out your salvation. And it is in that relationship that God helps us deal with our sin, with our brokenness, with our calling, with our healing. Because I think with sanctification, for those who have heard of it, I think you kind of often feel it's just to do with sin, but it's not. It's just to do with the whole package, every aspect of your life, you know, your calling, you know, your healing. Everything is to do with this journey. And just that journey of becoming more Christ-like. And last week, a big part of what Ryan talked about, and now Ruth has talked about as well, was the importance of knowing our identity. And because when we don't know it, we can struggle, and we can claw at things, and we can crave things that are really not us, because it gives us some sort of sense of identity. And Ryan talked about Saul, King Saul, and his eventual jealousy and insecurity over David, and we know this essentially drove him to even want to kill him. And, you know, that was a story of two men, one firmer in his true identity than the other. So, yeah, this week, I want to look at the New Testament Saul, who became Paul, and his conversion on the road to Damascus, and exactly, you know, what does that journey tell us about what it is to follow Jesus? What does that journey tell us about what was accomplished? And how can we learn from that, like, individually, but actually as a church on our move to Solar House? So if you just want to get your Bibles and turn to page 1040, and I'll read, I'll give you a moment, or, you know, I think it's on the screen. Great. I love the way that it just goes straight into it. Meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, "Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?" "Who are you, Lord?" Saul asked. "I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting," he replied. "Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do." The men traveling with Saul stood there speechless. They heard the sound but did not see anyone. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything. In Damascus there was a disciple named Ananias. The Lord called to him in a vision, "Ananias." "Yes, Lord," he answered. The Lord told him, "Go to the house of Judas on Straight Street and ask for a man from Tarsus named Saul, for he is praying. In a vision, he has seen a man named Ananias. Come and place his hands on him to restore his sight." "Lord," Ananias answered, "I've heard many reports about this man and all the harm he has done to your people in Jerusalem. And he has come here with authority from the chief priest to arrest all who call on your name." But the Lord said to Ananias, "Go, this man is my chosen instrument to proclaim my name to the Gentiles and their kings and to the people of Israel. I will show him how much he must suffer for my name." Then Ananias went to the house and entered it. Placing his hands on Saul, he said, "Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road as you were coming here, has sent me so that you may see again and be filled with the Holy Spirit." Immediately, something like scales fell from Saul's eyes, and he could see again. He got up and was baptized, and after taking some food, he regained his strength. Okay, we know that after this, eventually, Saul became Paul, and he preached throughout that part of the world to all Gentiles, like a lot of like non-Jewish people just traveling around. And, you know, this is possibly the most dramatic conversion experience in the New Testament. Saul, he went from a murderous, zealous persecutor to the most significant Christian missionary in history, and bringing the faith to a lot of this non-Jewish world. And his letters, you know, they make up a lot of the New Testament. You know, Jesus turned this guy around in 3 days, and he does that. He gets a lot done in 3 days. And one of the first questions that came to my mind when I read this was, what must have been going through Saul's mind over those 3 days? I could imagine it would be, you know, something like a mixture of fear, of hope, of wonder, of dread, all kind of rolled into one. He just like got a complete paradigm shift in his whole view of who the Messiah was and what the Messiah was about, completely. And at the same time, he must have been like, oh man, I got it so wrong. What was I doing? And yeah, he was having to deal with all these things. And the other question that kind of comes to mind is, you know, the whole reason for Saul being blinded in the first place, why was it that Jesus didn't just commission him then? Why did he kind of wait? Or why did he send him to then be commissioned? What was to do with this 3 days, this journey? Why was that kind of necessary at all? And what, you know, yeah, so if we think about it, Paul loved to travel. He was a bit of a traveler. He loved a journey, Paul did, whether it was before he was a Christian or afterwards. He traveled around, much like Tim McKeever, who's here today. Is he here? There he is. He loved to travel. And his mission, essentially, was to go all around that part of the world, trusting in the message of God and what he'd given to him. And, you know, but this was the first journey God had sent him on. And Paul was having to go into it blind and just hope that what Jesus had said to him was going to happen, was going to happen. And this was the first time. But we know this is what happened. What Jesus said was going to happen, happened. He got there. He met with Ananias. And not only was he commissioned to do what God wanted him to do, he was healed. It's amazing. So this journey for me was necessary. Jesus needed to show Saul that not only was he the Messiah, but that he could trust him as well. And it took that journey, I think. Perhaps it took that journey to happen. So, yeah, this journey seemed just as significant as the destination. And this seems to be something we learn throughout the Bible, that is the journey that God shows his faithfulness. It is the journey that grows us, whether it is the Israelites in the desert, or Abraham leaving his home. The journey is just as significant, if not more, than the destination. And we are the same with this. And just like Paul, we go on this journey of sanctification. We go on it, to a certain extent, blind as well. And because of this blindness, because of not knowing what's going to happen next, because of like maybe those sins or those struggles, or wondering about our calling, because we're not so sure, you know, life at times can be quite a testing, scary, and bewildering experience. You know, life is just such a mixture of like beautiful, horrible, amazing, joyful things. That is the life that we live at the moment. But this sort of suffering, there seems to be some sort of necessity to it. The author Richard Rohr calls this a necessary suffering, which I think just sounds awful. And it is but you know, at times when we are suffering, perhaps that can be comforting to know that actually, how am I going to grow in this? How am I going to grow at this time, God? What are you showing me that, yeah, maybe you didn't cause this, but how can I grow from this? How are you going to grow me? You know, and it's at the end of all these experiences that we have that we can see how we change. And I don't know about you, but in terms of those instant changes, they're not so apparent in our lives, but it's only until we look back in our life from like weeks, months, years ago to what we were like back then to how we are now in our walk, in how we represent Christ. Like maybe about back then, we can see how we had different values, how we viewed the world in a different way, how we believed God to a certain extent. But now we compare ourselves to that then, and we can see, all right, yes, I've grown. He's grown me. But going through this process, as I've said, is really, really difficult. And let's be honest, it doesn't feel like there's that much kind of journeying, or it doesn't feel like there's that much progress being made at those times. There's times when we're really struggling. And Paul, again, in his letter to the Corinthians, talks about this and encourages them in this kind of journey. If you want to just bring this up to the next slide. So yeah, in 2 Corinthians 4, 16 to 18, it says, "Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." So the question is, and this is a question both as individuals and corporately as a church, as we go on this journey of faith in our lives, with what God is doing with us, like, yeah, individually and as a church. How can we journey well? Or how can we go through the trials, the tribulations, you know, the struggles, the not knowing, the difficult phone calls, the emotional breakdowns, the 14 million building projects, you know, when it feels too hard, when we're tired, how can we sort of journey well? How can we get through this well? And Paul says it here in verse 18, we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. So in that blindness of the not knowing, we remember that we don't need our eyes to see the future, but actually, he's sort of talking about, in that blindness, what we want to actually do is think about what we can't see anyway, in that blindness. That faith in what that we are being renewed day by day, by day by day. That faith. Every day we are being sanctified through our journey. But we don't do this alone. We do it together, and we do it by God's Spirit, through community, and through those further along on the journey than us, whether that be our pastors, our mentors, those people who can kind of usher us along, bring us along. Or in our 2-4s, with like iron sharpening iron. And God always gives us signposts on the way, like whether that be through his Spirit, through spiritual gifts. He's always giving us signposts. And this is something I experienced. I remember on the start of, I guess you could call it, this sort of four-year journey here as a student when I first started, that, you know, I talked about this in my last sermon. I mentioned that, you know, I had a real panic about what I was doing. You know, I realized how much work I took on with my course and my placement and having to have a full-time job at the same time. And I got to a point pretty quickly where I was like, well, what have I taken on? And But I really felt like God was calling me to do it, that I still had a heart that, to do it. I wanted to do it. And I guess I prayed about this, obviously. And I said, God, I think I can do this. I think I can do this. But only if I know that you're with me. Like, only if I know that you're with me. Please just give me some sort of indication, whether it be, you know, verbally, yes, I am with you, or, you know, through some, just, I don't know, but Lord, I just need to know that you're with me. Have I got this wrong? Have I got this wrong? Is this not, because it feels like I'm supposed to be doing it, but I'm really struggling right now. And, you know, there was a few weeks later, and there was some sort of comedy, like improv night going on here, and I arrived late. And during the interval, I just went to get a drink, and one of the parents of my youth came up to me, and she had no idea what I was going through. And she said, James, when I saw you come in here, I got the a picture for you, that I think, and I don't know, you know, if it will mean anything, but I got a picture of like a shire horse pulling along a plow. And she said, And it was just going in a straight line, because it's important, you know, going up and down a field in a straight line. And I feel like God is telling, Maybe God is telling you that you need to just keep going in a straight line and not veer off in any sort of direction. And she was like, I don't know if that means anything. And I was like, it means something, yes. it means a lot. And that really, really encouraged me to know that God was with me. And through people, through his spirit, she was willing me on. And he was willing me on. And it's funny, really, because, you know, in the same way that Paul would probably look back to that conversion experience to encourage him in those struggles that he'd be on his travels, there were times that, you know, even when I struggled with my course, I didn't look back to that word enough. Like, do we often do that where there's often where words of encouragement, of prophecy that people have given to us, we can forget them so easily. But we need to kind of hold on to those things. We really do. And, you know, the other ways in which we want to journey well is what Ruth talked about again, about spending time with God. You know, in terms of trying to concentrate on what is unseen in the other, you know, Ryan talked about stillness, about practicing that. Sometimes that's such a good way of doing that. That's something I'm still trying to figure out. But, yeah, I do encourage you to just try all these different ways of whatever works for you. So, yeah. And so I've been pondering as well, how can we enjoy it a bit more? How can we enjoy this journey a bit more without constantly wondering about the future or living for the future or living for things that aren't quite here yet? Or maybe we're just struggling with a certain sin or just that kind of worried cycle that just goes round and round. How can we actually live in the moment and enjoy the journey and live and still kind of knowing that things aren't quite right? How can we enjoy now? How can we live in the moment? How can we kind of deal with that tension of the now and the not yet? And there's like a social scientist called Brené Brown. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's been mentioned a few times on this stage, actually. And she's a researcher who, she's done like TED Talks. She's done like two talks. And she studies and interviews people, studying the area of like human connection, and in particular, the areas of vulnerability and shame, which doesn't sound great, but apparently it's really interesting. And over 8 or 9 years, yeah, she studied this, and she's interviewed thousands of people, and on these two subjects in particular. And she talks about joy, and looking at the area of joy, and she figured out from all these interviewing people who experience joy, that it takes an enormous amount of vulnerability to really grasp joy. It takes a lot of vulnerability. It takes a lot of kind of letting go. And she found in her research as well that, you know, what is the difference between the people who can grasp joy and the people who can't as much? What is the kind of difference between those two people? Or what is it about the people who can't? What is it for them? And she found that it was a real sense with those people, a sense of foreboding, which kind of means a sense of something bad's going to happen. So I can't quite fully let go because I need to be on guard all the time. And that's what kind of happens on our journey when we know things aren't quite sorted out in our lives. You know, let me give you an example of this. Like, maybe you're a mother and, you know, you're watching your husband and your child playing football, and they're kicking the ball around, and they're just full of joy, and they're having a great time. And rather than you kind of really kind of enjoying the moment with them, all you can think about is, I hope he doesn't kick him in the head, or something like that. Maybe you're at dinner with your friends, and, you know, they're your best friends, and it's your favorite restaurant, and you should be, like, really embracing this and enjoying it, but all you can think about is the next day at work and that awkward meeting that you've got to have. And so you feel like you have to be on guard, but why? But yeah, so embracing that moment, embracing the joy is a real struggle. So what's the kind of antidote for that? What's the antidote? And she then interviewed the people who were able to grasp joy. What was the difference between the two? I mean, we saw like the bad side of it, but what was the good side? What was it? And even though this wasn't a Christian study, she found that the people who could embrace joy the most, embrace the moment the most, were the people who had an attitude of gratefulness, who were just grateful, who could just sit here, sit there with their friends at the restaurant and just have a kind of an attitude of, this is great. I've got my best friends around me. I've got my favorite dish that I've ordered for like the 20th time, chicken strips and chips, tally-ho. And just able to just be grateful for the moment. And just say, I'm just so grateful to be here. I'm just so happy for these people around me, to really have that attitude of gratefulness. And, you know, this is something that, you know, isn't out of the ordinary. This is something that that Paul talks about thousands of years before. And, yeah, in 1 Thessalonians 5 to 16, he talks about this. He talks about rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you in Jesus Christ. So I just really encourage you about that. You know, if there's times when you're really struggling to enjoy things that you know you should be enjoying more, maybe just take a step back and just say, God, I'm just really thankful to be here right now. I just thank you for this time. Thank you for my friends. I thank you for my amazing children. I thank you that I'm warm, that I have shelter. I thank you. Take that moment and see what happens. So kind of the last thing I want to kind of mention is, and perhaps this is for people who are still kind of figuring out the start, figuring out whether they want to get involved in this journey at all. And that is, sometimes there can be this fear of change. There can be a fear of the unknown when you're blind. The fear of the unknown, what's God going to do with me if I go on this journey? You know, there's some Christians, I think, or some people when they're just starting on this journey or figuring out if they want to follow Jesus, of, yeah, does that mean I'm going to have like a frontal lobotomy or something? Or I'm going to need to have a complete personal, you know, personality transplant? Am I going to be a completely different person? And that isn't the case at all. If you think about it, I mean, look at Paul. You know, before his conversion, he was a zealous, outspoken Pharisee traveling around persecuting Christians. And after his conversion, he was a zealous, outspoken apostle traveling around speaking the gospel. So Jesus just took Saul's God-given gifts and he pointed them in the right direction. And that's what we kind of need to remember. So if you're still figuring this stuff out, it's like God takes your God-given gifts, your best attributes, and he makes them better. And then he points you in the way, in the right direction to glorify him. So my question to you guys tonight is, the one I started with, what is God doing in your life right now? What is Jesus doing in your life right now? What is he showing you? What is he refining? What are you working on together? And are you journeying well?